If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery. When it comes to hiring, don't go searching for the one. Just meet your match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth interviews MSNBC's Chris Hayes, as well as sports journalist Rich Eisen. Plus, both Chris and Rich take a few more questions exclusively for the Late Night podcast.
Our guest tonight is the Emmy-winning host of All In with Chris Hayes, which airs weeknights at 8 p.m. on MSNBC. He also hosts the podcast Why Is This Happening? Please welcome back to the show our friend Chris Hayes, everybody. Welcome back, buddy.
It's great to be here.
I'm glad we mentioned the podcast. Your podcast is fantastic.
Thank you. I was glad you mentioned it, too. I've been having a lot of fun with it.
And for those who don't know, you basically, it's a sort of a single issue.
Yeah.
Which is very nice because sometimes having an hour on a podcast gives you a little bit more time to talk about something like Brexit, for example, that
exactly.
You might not have on
your
show.
Yeah, deep dive, long conversation. You can sort of get into things a little more off the news cycle, talk about things other than the present situation.
Yes. Well, you just hit 6 years, your anniversary. Congratulations
on
the show.
Thank you.
I'm sure the same question people like me get asked, you get asked. It probably feels a little bit longer than 6 years after everything that's happened.
It feels like my entire lifetime.
Yeah.
It really does. I mean, particularly the last few years. Every week is a year.
Yeah, I think that's about right.
Someone the other day, today we were in a second meeting, someone's like, when the Barr report came out, you know, the Barr letter came out 10 days ago, I was like, stop it.
Yeah, it was only 10 days ago. And what's been nice is you have found time to talk about other things, and you hosted a town hall with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez that was about the Green New Deal.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, again, something that on the surface people have heard a lot about, but maybe not much more than that.
Yeah, it's funny. It's become this, instantly became this, like, cartoonish villain for the right. I mean, Trump TV talks about it, like, all the time.
Yeah.
But very few people were talking. People were talking about the politics. They were talking about the criticism. Very few people were talking about it on its own terms, which is not to say, like, oh, this is the way to go. It's just, what is the thing? How would it work? What's the theory behind it? So we wanted to kind of take some time to talk about
that. And did you find, being in the town hall format, you got the sense that there are people out there now more than ever who accept climate change as a serious issue?
I think it is one of the biggest generational divides in American politics. I mean, we did this thing. It was great. It was, like, 900 people. It was in the Bronx, which is where Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez from. It's from where I'm from. We did it in the hospital I was born in, actually,
wow.
Funnily enough.
So now it's getting creepy.
Yeah. in the L&D wing, which was weird for everyone. We did it there. And one of the things I think you've seen that's been transformational, particularly in the last three to five years, is there's just grassroots energy around this issue. And for a long time, it was like, oh, this thing, it's happening off in the future, and we should do something about it. But there are people who understand that we are on the front edge of it now, and we have to meet the challenge now.
I certainly enjoyed it. Some people did not. You mentioned, or you alluded to the fact that, you know, the Green New Deal is, Fox News has certainly framed it as being very problematic, and they do seem to have an obsession with AOC as a creator of bad things.
Yes.
Tucker Carlson, though, focused on you.
He did.
And had this to say about you in the town hall.
Chris Hayes is what every man would be if feminists ever achieved absolute power in this country. Apologetic, bespectacled, and deeply, deeply concerned about global warming and the patriarchal systems that cause it.
I mean, of all the things, the idea that if the feminists take over, we're all going to have to wear glasses.
No, it's true. The most macho thing you can do is drive your car without your glasses.
Yeah.
That is
also
peak masculinity.
I don't know anything about Tucker Carlson, but he looks like a guy who needs glasses because it's constantly like... Maybe you'd be like a little... Maybe that's it. We think he's like, why is he so flummoxed? It's like he can barely read the cue cards.
He needs the feminist takeover to happen sooner. I think that he did not quite recognize the context of that comment outside the confines of the bubble of Fox News.
Right, that it would escape and be...
It did escape, and it led to basically the best 24 hours of social media of my life.
Yeah. It's really nice. Well, you...
It's like my birthday. I was like, oh, thanks.
And you're active on social media, and you have War on Dad Bod, and I know a lot of dads out there, me included, we just think it's great that you're out there fighting the dad bod. And so this is your Instagram. Do you want to read that for us?
Every quarter, the Femnarchist Junta requires all adult males to present themselves for a fitness inspection. Failure to pass results in summary execution.
that was, I will say all things, All things being equal, a zinger from Tucker Carlson to you is actually a lot more fun than a lot of the stuff that comes out of Fox. I wish it was all.
It was delightful.
All zingers like
exactly.
that. Yeah.
Yes. Very low stakes situation.
Yeah, that was. You know, if they were just going after you instead of immigrants, I'd be like, I'll take that trade. Yeah. But do you have time to consume much Fox News?
No, I don't. I mean, you do see it. Things cross your feed. We have this thing where it's on, you know, it's on in the office. You got the three big cable news stations, and you sort of see what's on air on CNN. Partly as a sort of point of comparison, what are people covering? What are the general stories that are driving that day? I will watch stuff online sometimes. I don't have a huge appetite for it.
Sure.
But I do end up seeing a fair amount.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and do you have a sense that are you surprised by what you see, or is it now, have you come, I mean, does it stop being surprising at some point?
No, you know, what's sort of fascinating about it, it's like, it is to news what, like, a Broadway set is to an actual apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you look at it, you're like, that sort of looks like news.
Yeah.
But it's like this fabricated AirSats version of it.
Yeah.
And everyone sort of does all the stuff inside the play acting set that is this little sort of universe they've created. And so it's sort of unnerving and it's surreal. And I think to the degree that people exist inside just that world, it could be really toxic.
Yes, I think we found out that is true.
I would also say very true.
Yeah.
It's the oranges of a lot of our problems.
Yeah, it really is. That's a callback. That's a guest doing a callback. you have been banging the drum on climate change, I think, more than a lot of people have. Do you, you were mentioning that maybe there's this sort of generational shift. Do you feel like it's getting through to older generations? Do you feel like...
Yeah, I think what you're seeing a real change in public opinion. There's two things that are happening. One is... I think the debate over this is the climate warming is gone, basically. I mean, 15 of the hottest years have been the last 19 years. Like, everyone gets it.
Yeah.
There's still this sort of ridiculous thing about, like, well, are humans causing it? That's also receding to the background. The big question now becomes one of prioritization. I mean, there's lots of things happening in the world. There are lots of things happening in this country. There's a lot of challenges and issues we face. And one of the key questions is, do we understand this as the priority? Is this something that we sort of structure and orient American policy around? that was the case in the New Deal, and meaning the challenge of the Great Depression. It was the case in World War II. It was the case for multiple decades of the Cold War. I mean, from administration to administration, the U.S. government, both domestically and internationally, oriented itself around a singular challenge, which it saw as defeating communism. The question for us now is, do we orient all of American social policy, economic policy, towards this challenge or not?
I'm very happy when you take time to talk about things like this. Obviously, there was, with the release of the Barr memo about the Mueller report, and again, we're still waiting for the report, but there was this criticism that came from a lot of different angles that maybe the media had focused too much on what the Mueller report was going to be and what it was going to do. How do you, looking back at the last 2 years, have you reflected back on how you covered it at all?
I think we all have. I mean, the biggest thing to me is a criminal and counterintelligence investigation of the President of the United States and his campaign is big news in any universe at any time.
Right.
One that ends up leading to his campaign manager going to jail and his personal lawyer and fixer pleading guilty to crimes is an enormous deal as well. And the big thing that has driven this from the beginning and my feeling about the Mueller report and from the beginning is there are many unanswered factual questions about what happened that we need to know the answer to. And the coverage was a way of trying to get to the bottom of it, which we are still not at the bottom of. And I think that's entirely justified through any journalistic lens.
I want to show one last photo because you've obviously been in politics for a long time. This is 04? Is this?
That's 04, yeah.
04, and you were an organizer?
I was a canvasser field organizer for an environmental group that was knocking on doors in support of John Kerry.
There we go. Look at that. When you walked up, they were like, look at this respectable guy. This bespectacled guy's going to talk to me about the environment. I know it.
He's deeply, deeply concerned.
Yeah, they were like, this guy's not with the NRA. what did you find knocking on doors?
You know, I love that experience. I would knock on doors. I get other people to knock on doors. And I think one of the great things about it is when we talk about politics from 30,000 feet up or you have a TV show, you have to sort of simplify, put people in categories. People are so weird.
Yeah.
Actual individual voters are just irreducibly strange. And the strangeness of both people and their political views gets sort of smoothed out when you talk about categories. You know, like, oh, this demographic's going for this person. But when you actually talk to people, people have all sorts of amazing combinations of sensible ideas combined with totally crazy ideas right next to each other. And you sort of remember just how much of a human enterprise democracy is.
It's supposed to be nice. I mean, it is. I mean, it's terrifying
nice.
Because
it's both terrifying
you know
inspiring.
Humans. Yeah, we all know a few humans where you'd be like, oh, I'd rather not you. But but I always appreciate you having here. Congrats on 6 years.
It's great to be here.
Always
thanks.
A pleasure.
Thanks a lot.
Chris Hayes, everybody. All In with Chris Hayes. Weeknights, 8 p.m. on MSNBC.
Are we on? We're doing a podcast.
Hey.
Hey. We're doing a podcast.
Hey, what's up? How are you, Henry Melcher?
How's it going, Chris? That was great.
Thank you. Thanks for shouting out the podcast. I really appreciate it.
We love the podcast. I emailed you about how much I love the Subway podcast.
Oh, yeah.
I got a huge transit nerd.
I know. I got a lot of people telling me that they were like dealing with. No, that's not us.
A4. We're getting in the wrong elevator now.
It's going to be a real
adventure.
We both
work in this building and don't know which. here we are. Okay, this elevator here.
So, yeah, no, it's been fun to do that.
Yeah, it's great. How long does it take to kind of produce those compared to the show?
Oh, they're much faster. I mean, the show, like, as you know, television takes a lot more work than it looks.
Yes, right.
Like, a lot of thought and a lot of labor go into everything that you see on the screen.
Yes.
And you don't notice it when you're watching TV because you're just experiencing it. But there's a lot of labor.
I did graphics for you for years. That was my first
true.
Job.
That was stressful. That was a high-stress, low-reward job.
The most stressful job I've ever had.
Because basically, if you have the best day possible, no one notices your job.
100%.
And if you screw up one little thing.
And there is something I screwed
there
up.
There is one. Yeah. Should we tell this story?
How do you tell this story? There was once we accidentally put the wrong credit on.
Why was that credit on there?
Because we
showed a solar farm, I think, in Haiti,
we did.
The photo credit just said stormfront.org.
Yeah, okay. And it said it huge.
Yeah, yeah.
And the reason is there was a photo from a few months before
about a white supremacist.
Yes, and you were like, hey, please make sure that on this photo, this horrible photo, that you put Stormfront huge so then people see that like clearly we realize this is from a horrible organization.
Right.
And that later became then
the template. That was the template for the graphic.
Template. And I remember that happened and I saw that error and I had a full-on panic attack. And then I'll never forget, our senior producer in the control room turned around, looked at me. You G-chatted her from the set of this live TV show. And I think your G-chat just was, please tell me this didn't happen. She turns around and looks at me, and I'm like, it did. And then I went into TV. Your office thinking you were going to fire me, and you were very nice about it.
Of course not.
And that still that still haunts me.
I make them every night.
Yeah,
that's right, I got to go do my television show.
Thanks, Chris.
Right, talk to you soon. Bye.
You know our guest from his work on the NFL Network and as the host of the Rich Eisen Show, which airs weekdays from noon to 3 p.m. on the Audience Network and Bleacher Report Live. Please welcome back to the show our friend Rich Eisen, everybody. How are you?
Hello, sir. Hello,
it's
everybody.
Lovely to have you in New York City. You're doing your show in New York for the last couple days?
I am. I'm doing it here from the Holland Tunnel, or I guess I should say a studio. not different. From the mouth of the actual thoroughfare. But no, I'm here, and I love it. I'm from New York City. I love being back.
That's great. And then you're off to do, it is your 15th NFL draft. Is that correct?
15th.
Congratulations.
That's
wonderful.
And I appreciate
that. And how many years now has it been a three-day affair? How many years is it?
About five now.
About 5 years. So this takes a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, it is three long days.
It is. It's very odd to say that it requires a lot of stamina to sit on your ass for as long as I do.
Yeah.
But it does. Like, you've got to sit up straight. You got to work on your core.
Yeah.
You know, and get through it. Just take it one pick at a time.
And you have to know a little bit about a lot of players,
yes.
Right? I mean,
yeah.
There must be a ton of research. I'm not joking about that.
It is a ton of research. But, you know, if in any doubt you just say, I think he's got a big upside.
Oh, that's very good.
You know, like,
yeah.
He's got a lot of ability.
Oh, and, wow. Now I'm hearing that, and I realize I believe that a lot, and you've never...
He has no upside. He has zero ability. But, yeah,
and it's in Nashville this year? First time in Nashville?
First time in Nashville.
One of the best cities in America.
Yeah, I think they are legitimately shutting down Broadway
and
making
great.
It the Draft Hall, and there's going to be hundreds of thousands of people there, and I can't wait to see it.
That is great. The sitting aside,
yes.
There's another thing that you require some actual training. How many years now for Run Rich Run?
I've done it now 15 years also.
15 years
yeah.
as well.
Yeah.
So... A real quick explanation is one of the things that happens at the NFL Combine
yes.
is they time your 40-yard dash, right?
They run 40-yard dashes. That is a metric by which players are rated.
A fast player at a fast position, say a wide receiver, would do it in a...
4.4.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So this is 15 years now.
Yes.
What is your best time?
Well, my best time is 5.96.
Okay.
But I think I should let everyone know, if you're unaware, I run it in a suit. I run it in my uniform.
Yeah.
And
so that probably adds
at least a half
two
a
full seconds.
I appreciate your. Yeah. It's not the most aerodynamic way to run.
And is this the first year that you've actually shown the simulcast to give people
no,
a sense?
No, it was a few years ago where the NFL Network came with this brilliant construct of overlaying my 40-yard dash on top of the actual 40-yard dashes.
Yeah.
And it's visually striking.
And the brilliant thing, here's what's really brilliant about it, is I, in my head, would have done it where you start at the same time and we see how far ahead they do.
Yeah.
They do a simulcast where they give you a head start.
Yes. And then you watch them run through me.
Well, I describing it now, I feel like
taking
a look.
Oh, we can see. Great, let's take
a look. The Buckeye, as you know, 7-yard head start for Rich.
Go.
Where's Paris? Oh, there he is. How about 230-pound receiver DK Metcalf from Ole Miss, 4.33.
Give me
5-yard head start.
Five? Come on.
we got to go to the Michigan guys. We got Bush.
Yeah.
Gary
Bush,
and Winovich.
Gary and Winovich.
All three of them.
Fantastic. Now, I do feel like that's very unfair. Obviously, not only are these soon-to-be professional athletes,
yeah.
But they are much younger men than you. But this
yes.
is very nice. The NFL Network then just showed us exactly how fast you are. They let you run against some regular people. Who's this?
Well, I think we're about to see here a high school student who ran it. Unbeknownst to him, he was being filmed at the time.
Gotcha.
I think I actually did, in fact, beat him.
Okay. So
we're about to see here?
Let's see.
Let's see.
Every man wants to run these races. Let's get simulcam guy. Peter Frank. Go, Peter.
No.
Go, Peter. No. We had a high school kid on Thursday during rehearsal. This is no head start. This is a straight-up race.
High step on him, Rich. High step on him.
I feel so bad. As if that young man's high school experience isn't awkward enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here Comes Me. It's the worst John Hughes movie ever. Yeah.
It's a good first act of a John Hughes movie.
That's right.
Tom Brady reached out and offered to help you train next year.
Yes, the NFL Network put that whole escapade that we just showed on an Instagram feed, and TB12 himself threw out a comment offering to train me next year. And,
yeah.
I mean, how do I not take him up on that?
The interesting thing is, and again, one of the greatest football players of all time, the top five, easy.
Yes.
You make an argument for number one, yet not known as a running quarterback.
No,
this is the first time, I would argue, this is the first time he's seen anyone where he's thought, I could teach them to run.
I know. He sees a mold of clay.
And what about Belichick? He came over.
Because we do this for charity now. We've done this for charity for the last few years.
For
St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. This year, we were able to raise $500,000
That's
for them.
That's fantastic.
Thank you. And thanks. It's great. Everybody should go donate to St. Jude. And so the NFL community has really gotten into it. And 2 years ago, and also this year as well, Bill Belichick crashed the NFL Network set at the Combine. I'm looking at the field, and this was 2 years ago. All of a sudden, this big old paw just slaps a check on my notes right in front of me, and I see this big hand, and then I see the piece of paper. It's a check for St. Jude. It's very generous. And after I see the money, I look at the top, and I'm like, who the hell is William Belichick?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, God, that's... And I look up, and there's the smiling face of the modern-day Lombardi looking down at me.
Yeah.
And it was just really wild to see his personal check and then to see his face.
I like that even in an act of kindness, he can be terrifying.
That's spoken like a true Steeler fan.
As a
right
true
there.
Steeler fan. Here's my Steeler question, then I'll let you go. There we go. You're Michigan. Devin Bush, is he going to fall to the Steelers at 20?
I think if you're lucky, he will.
I'd be very happy, but I don't think he's going to make it.
I don't think so either, but he'd be really special.
Fit right in, right?
There's another Michigan Wolverine, Chase Winovich, who's from the area.
Yeah.
He's got a whole Clay Matthews-looking look to him, too. He'd be a perfect Steeler also.
All right. Thank you for that. I look forward to watching, as always. Thanks for being here. That's Rich Eisen, everybody. Rich Eisen's show airs weekdays at noon on the Audience Network and Bleacher Report Live.
Hey, this is Kevin, one of the producers here at Late Night, and we are backstage with Rich Eisen. Hey, Rich.
How you doing?
Thanks for taking a few more questions backstage here.
It's extra content, and I, as a daily content generator of what I do, I respect this. I'm like actually sitting here thinking when I'm done with my guests, if they don't have to go run out, maybe while I'm continuing to do the show, somebody grills them. I shouldn't use that word. I'm assuming that this is going to be a grueling sequence.
Yeah.
Well, you guys shouldn't assume that.
3 hours to fill.
3 hours. I know that's a lot.
Yeah.
So, but we have usually one guest an hour, sometimes two, and sometimes they, you know, I take it as a compliment they want to hang out. So you're putting a bug in my head right now. I like it.
You guys are doing the show from New York today.
Yes.
You talked to the coach of the Jets.
I did
today.
Adam Gase. Yes.
Yeah. How are they feeling about the upcoming?
I guess
season?
He's excited. You know what? I mean, these coaches—they're all—they downplay everything. They're also in the middle of the draft preparation right now, so it's getting a little bit intense for them. Plus, the Jets, the NFL rules that you're not allowed to have contact with players in this period of time, because you give an NFL coach an inch, they will take the proverbial yard.
Sure.
So there has to be a situation where they're not allowed to talk to players, or at least not put players in a position where they feel like something that's voluntary is really mandatory.
Mm-hmm.
So Adam Gase has not technically had really a serious face-to-face conversation with his new quarterback, Sam Darnold, yet.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's freaking him out.
Right.
And these guys are over-preparers and control freaks. So on Monday is when that's really going to go down. I mean, he spoke to Le'Veon Bell, I'm sure, when he was a free agent. The minute that Le'Veon signed, he couldn't talk to him. It's nuts. So he's ready to go. So he really, I can't say, well, you know, how's your quarterback look? You know, and I'm sure he'd give a coaching answer anyway, but he hasn't really talked to him yet.
Yeah.
He's probably chatted with him on the field beforehand when he was a Dolphins head coach more than he's already as a Jet head coach.
Yeah.
It's kind of nuts.
I'm a Cleveland Browns fan. You talked to Seth a little bit about the Steelers.
Yes.
You mentioned Le'Veon Bell coming to the Jets. They picked up Odell Beckham Jr. this year. How do you think that will make the Browns?
It's their division to win. I know I'm speaking on the podcast of a diehard Steelers fan, but it's their division to win. They're a better team. They've got a better roster, top to bottom. They have a head coach who's never done it before. So as long as he manages the crucible moments of a game in terms of timeouts, when to throw a challenge flag, when to not,
what sort of mechanism needs to be done real time operationally as a head coach. If he gets those things down pat, I think the Cleveland Browns have a great chance this season to do better than they have before. But as long as Tom Brady is a living, breathing human being on the planet practicing photosynthesis who can fog up a mirror with a coach like Belichick,
yeah,
they're still the team to beat. And I don't know how the Browns go into New England and do something like that. They can, but I mean, you never know.
We were talking a little earlier about Gronk retiring, and you
right.
aren't fully convinced that he might hang it up.
I'm not convinced yet. I mean, he's 29 years old. I think when September rolls around and the training camp period is over and the tough, grueling stuff is over, I think he'll miss it. And if the team struggles, I mean, you're not going to find someone to replace Gronk. That's simple.
Yeah.
You're going to try and find somebody who can get you a percentage of it. And if they have trouble doing that, and Tom Brady calls up Rob Gronkowski in like November 1st and said, hey, bud, we need you. I mean, you got 3 months in you. I think the answer is going to be yes. It's not like he's worried about pushing his Hall of Fame induction back a year.
Yeah.
So he'll be a 37-year-old man as opposed to 36.
Right.
Which is, if he does, in fact, go into the Hall of Fame, right now on the current schedule, he'll be the second youngest enshrinee. Gale Sayers was 37 in 1977. That's the youngest enshrinee in the history of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Gronk would be tied for second with Jim Brown is how old he would be.
Yeah.
So it's not like that's a concern at all. If he wants to do it, he'll do it. You know. And so I think it's entirely possible.
Right. You talked with Seth a little bit about it, but you're heading down to Nashville at the end of the month for the draft.
Yes.
You talked a little bit about the stamina it takes and the hard work that you have to put into, you know, knowing all the players and the moves on each team. I mean, how big a staff do you guys have to cover?
Well, it's tremendous. I mean, the research crew is incredible. My analysts who I'm doing the show with, they're not mine. I mean, my cohorts, my compadres, the analysts are as well-versed as anybody. So, I mean, I'm not there anyway to, you know, inform people of what I think of somebody's ability. I mean, I can chime in with what I think the kid has done, what he can do, what I've seen in the college game myself, and what the team needs. But in terms of, you know, breaking down tape and all that stuff, but I do feel maybe after what I just told Seth, I should drop on the air, you know, like, this guy's got a lot of ability. It's a ton of upside. I mean, like, if you ever hear that, you know, I'm just filling time.
Well, how often does that happen
when
you're looking
really.
To fill?
No, it's, I mean,
you have to, I mean, to some extent, right?
It goes really fast. I mean, there used to be, I think it used to be 15 minutes for a first round selection. Wow. Now it's 10.
Okay.
And it goes really fast because the first team on the clock, we're talking about, let's say the Arizona Cardinals, we're talking about the Cardinals and what they need, what they do. Let's just say they choose Kyler Murray. Then we're going to talk all about Kyler Murray being 5'10" and an eighth and what he did in Oklahoma and what Baker Mayfield does last year at Oklahoma. And the last time that the same school sent two Heisman Trophy winners back to back as the number one overall pick. I'm sure I'll have that stat at my disposal. All of that will happen. Analyst, one of my David Shaw of Stanford is going to be on our set again, part of our first night crew. He will say what he's going to say. Before that, Kurt Warner, Hall of Fame quarterback, will be on our set. I'm sure he's going to have a say about Kyler Murray. And Daniel Jeremiah, who is the guy on our set now, with Mike Mayock, our longtime analyst, now the general manager of the Raiders, he'll have his say. Now you've got pretty much, what, like 3 minutes left on the clock until the 49ers make their pick.
Right.
And then we'll turn out, you guys, what do you think the 49ers need?
All
and you
over
go
again.
Right down the row again, and we have a conversation. 49ers make a pick, then we talk about that, so on, so forth, et cetera. There's no need for me to say, boy, that guy's got some upside.
He's got some
upside. Like, there will not be a need for that.
Well, we look forward to watching, and
thanks,
you know,
brother.
Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks, pal.
Late Night with Seth Meyers airs weeknights on NBC at 12:35, 11:35 Central. Original music on the Late Night podcast is by the HE Band. Don't forget to follow the handle Late Night Seth on social media and tell your friends to subscribe to the Late Night podcast wherever they get their podcasts.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.